Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. It's day four of what is reported to be the largest prison hunger strike ever in the state of California. 30,000 inmates at 22 of the state's 33 prisons and four out-of-state prisons, where California inmates are sent, are refusing to eat. They're protesting long-term confinement in solitary isolation units. Nearly 5,000 of California's 130,000 inmates are in the SHU. That stands for Special Housing Unit. According to a recent piece in Alternet, the conditions are deplorable. Quote, prisoners in Pelican Bay State Prison Security Housing Unit are isolated for at least 22.5 hours a day in cramped concrete windowless cells. They're denied telephone calls, contact visits, any kind of programming, adequate food, and often medical care. Nearly 750 of these men have been held under these conditions for more than a decade, dozens over 20 years. This treatment has inflicted profound psychological suffering and caused debilitating physical ailments, end quote. The protest was organized by inmates in solitary confinement at Pelican Bay State Prison, which is near the Oregon border. In a letter written by four Pelican Bay inmates, it demands include a five-year limit on solitary confinement, monthly phone calls to family and friends, expanded social visiting times, educational and rehabilitation programming, and better food. Now, this hunger strike follows a 2011 strike, which involved roughly 6,000 inmates. That strike led to a class action lawsuit against the Department of Corrections, which is currently in mediation. But inmates say the CDCR has not made any real reforms. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about the strike and conditions inside California's prisons. Today, we're joined by Nancy Mullane, a freelance reporter who covers the prison system. She has gained unprecedented access to San Quentin, including the solitary unit called the Adjustment Center. Nancy has been following and covering these issues for 7 years, first started out by gaining access to level two and eventually going to level three and level four. She's the only reporter who's actually reached level four at San Quentin. She's the author of Life After Murder, Five Men in Search of Redemption. She regularly covers the prison system for KALW News, and Nancy joins me here in studio. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Isaac Ontiveros. He's Communications Director for Critical Resistance. Isaac is on the media team for Prison Hunger Strike Solidarity Coalition, and he's been doing anti-prison industrial complex organizing for many years. Hi, Isaac. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. And we did have someone from the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation booked, but unfortunately they just canceled, but we got word that they might be calling sometime over the course of the show, so we hope that does happen. So why don't we start off with you, Isaac? It's day four of the strike, and according to reports, advocates say that this could last for weeks. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it could last for weeks. I think the prisoners are determined. They understand, you know, as they put out in their communications, you know, over the course of the past 7 months, they understand that it's a long-haul proposition. They understand that they're trying to make changes and that it will take time, and that they understand it as a protest movement. And so they're ready to go the long haul, and they are very aware of the solidarity work that's happening outside the prisons, and they understand that it'll, by their willingness to go a long time, that will create momentum that will hopefully bring the CDCR and the governor into good faith, fair, honest negotiations around this issue.
Nancy, what do we need to know about this strike? 30,000 inmates, it's day four. They're refusing to eat their food. I've seen a couple photos in the media of guards who have these trays of food and they're just packed because no one's taking them.
Well, I just spoke with Jeffrey Callison, who's the press secretary for the CDCR, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, which oversees 33 prisons, approximately 130,000 inmates in the state. He said that today is kind of a marketing day, not marketing, but market day in this strike, in that in order for a prisoner to be, it's determined that a prisoner is actually participating in the hunger strike, they have to refuse 9 consecutive meals. And in order to that began on Monday. So today is the day that they begin counting those inmates who have refused the 9 consecutive meals. One thing that he did mention is they have noticed that some of the prisoners of the 29,000 plus that they have counted so far, representing 3/4 of the prisons in the state, or about 20 prisons. And they're not identifying which prisons and exactly how which prisoners. They're just giving some general numbers at this point. That this 29,000 is a drop from Monday, and also and yesterday was a little bit more of a drop from Monday. But that these prisoners, once they've hit today, once they've counted those prisoners, they will release a number this afternoon, and they suspect that that number will be a little bit lower than 29,000. They're also saying that they're seeing prisoners who are refusing CDCR officially provided meals. So those meals that are provided by the state are also, they've visually seen them eating what's called canteen food. That means food that the prisoners themselves were able to purchase in the canteen with their own funds that then they can keep in their cells. So there is some maybe possible overlap of prisoners that are refusing state-funded food and prisoners that are consuming food that they actually have on their own.
And so the prisoners get 3 meals a day?
Yes.
And so 9 consecutive meals would be 3 days.
Correct.
So that's why the count would start today.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the specifics here. I'm a little bit confused about long-term confinement and the SHU. I've seen so many different numbers. Some say 10,000 of California's 130,000 inmates are in the SHU. Other reports say 5.
Well, I think that there are, you know, I've been inside a number of prisons because one of the things I began looking at in 2007 when I began this reporting was what is it really like behind the walls of prisons? What kind of environments exist behind the walls? And there are different levels of restriction. So if you're in mainline, you do spend a good deal of your time in your cell. But then at certain times,
what
of
is
the
mainline?
Oh, mainline. So it's a level 2 environment. So, for instance, in San Quentin, the vast majority of the population is in mainline. So they go to their cells, but they leave their cells for most of the day to have jobs. They actually have 9-to-5 jobs. They walk around. They're out on the yard. They have exercise. They have basketball, tennis. They have baseball teams and tennis teams. That's mainline. So these are inmates that have been identified as not being a risk to the safety and security of the institution. So they have a lot of independence and freedom relatively inside San Quentin. And there's other prisons that have that same kind of mainline experience, level 2 experience. Then you move to a level 3 experience. And so that becomes a more restricted environment. And then a level 4 is the most restrictive environment. If you look at the level 4 environments inside California's prisons, if you look at San Quentin, there are death row. And I've been on death row. I'm probably the only prisoner, reporter who's been on death row in the last decade inside San Quentin. And San Quentin holds the only death row for men in the state. Hmm. And in that environment, there are 3 different environments. Now, of all the prisons that I've been in and of all the restricted environments, including Pelican Bay, I would say there's the security housing unit. And in Pelican Bay, I think that, and I spent about 6 hours in the security housing unit at Pelican Bay by myself with the public information officer and inmates in their cells. I actually got to go in their cells with them. Mm. And one thing that I noticed was, A, the cells have porous doors, so they have air, they have light. The ceilings are all full skylight. They have the porous doors allow them to communicate with each other throughout the day. And that's the security housing unit. Then you go to an environment like at San Quentin in the adjustment center. That's an entirely different environment. There are 100 men in the adjustment center at San Quentin. That's what I would consider, if when we talk about solitary confinement, that's what I would call solitary confinement, because these are cells that are small. They have no window. They have no fresh air. like the cells at Pelican Bay with porous doors, air. These are cells that have steel doors, and they're in there 22 hours a day to 24 hours a day, depending on if it's the day that they get to be taken out of their cell to a recreation yard, which is really like a cage that you would see in a picture of Guantanamo Bay. And then they're taken back in. That's what I would call solitary confinement. Now, taking those two environments, the security housing unit, where they do have communication ability with the prisoners in that same pod. They do have access to air. They do have access to an outdoor facility, even though it's small. And then you take the solitary confinement unit, which is at Adjustment Center. What these inmates are asking for primarily is to have that time in these environments, whether it's the security housing unit, which is not just at Pelican Bay. There are security housing units throughout prisons in the state. To have access, to have that time, an indeterminate time sentence in that facility, reevaluated, and the terms of that evaluation. So they can actually move out of that secured environment into a more mainstream environment.
And they're calling for 5 years, which still sounds like a lot. But when you look at some of these prisoners, they've been in for over 20 years.
Well, I think one of the concerns and of this California, and I'm only telling you what I've been told by the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, is that their concern is that the inmates in the security housing unit at Pelican Bay are considered, have been validated as gang members. And so what they've done is they've set a policy of debriefing. And in order to get out of the SHU with there's two terms in the SHU. One is an indeterminate term, meaning you don't know when you're going to get out. And the other is a determinate term. And that means you've been sent there for a specific violation. It's not about a validation of a gang, that you will then get out at a date that is predetermined. So what they're concerned with right now is that indeterminate sentence. The indeterminate SHU terms are primarily for validation of gang activity. So in order to get out of the SHU, if you've been validated as a gang member, it means you go through an extremely rigorous debriefing process. And that takes years, according to the CDCR.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that, Isaac. There's a great website called Solitary Watch, and it was founded by the journalist James Ridgway. He's going to be on our show tomorrow. And I sometimes feel like the human side of this is often missing. If you go to solitarywatch.org or .com, you'll see photos of five of the men who are currently in solitary, along with quotes. And I just want to quote a guy, Jay Hashima Denham. He's 41 at Corcoran State Prison. He has been in the SHU for over a decade, following validation as a member of the Black Gorilla family as evidence of gang activity. His cell was reportedly raised by prison guards for Japanese artwork involving dragons, and the dragon is a symbol of the Black Gorilla family. He said, quote, "For anyone to consider these conditions anything less than torture could only be a prison industrialist or some other type of draconian public official." So, Isaac, give us a sense. How do people like Hashima Denham organize while they're in the SHU?
I think one of the things I do want to comment on is this, the message that the CDCR is putting out around they are eating canteen food. I just want to encourage your listeners to be wary that the CDCR has a vested interest in breaking this strike. And like any strike, they're going to put out things around, oh, people aren't actually on strike. I think that so I just want your listeners to be wary of that as far as what participation means.
Okay,
I should
say just again that we did invite CDCR. They had to cancel about 5 minutes before we went live, and hopefully they'll call
in. Sure. Yeah. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And, you know, in being in contact with some of the strikers, you know, they have talked about that, and they've said that actually the eating food inside of their cell thing is something that, you know, they accused them of last time in 2011 in order to break the strike. And they've also used it as pretext in order to toss people's cells and also move them into administrative segregation. As far as the validation process, I think you're right. I think that's at the core of how a lot of the prisoners understand, you know, how, you know, the gentleman that you just quoted uses the term draconian. And it's this, and that same story, I can't even count how many times I've heard, in which an investigation is started around an individual, and one of the, you know, pretexts for their validation is a piece of artwork, or, for example, a book, a George Jackson book has been used before, and things like that, or, you know, Aztec artwork and things like this. And what is particularly hellish, I think, for a lot of people that are in solitary, that are in security housing units, is they also don't necessarily know how or why they're validated. So there will be some reference to these things, and then they don't know how or why they're able to get out beyond these, you know, labyrinthine at best debriefing processes that, you know, often, you know, pit them against other prisoners. I was just talking with somebody who spent time in the SHU, and, you know, they, you know, told this story where they go into the SHU and the guards tell them right when they walk in, there's three ways to get out of here: parole, debrief, or die. Mm. And we'll even elaborate on that and saying, you want to get out of here, you need to replace yourself with two people. And I think what is interesting, to say the least, the hunger strikers are very articulate about that, and they're very I think they're very articulate in communicating what sort of stress and what sort of damage that does to themselves around, I'm stuck in here, I know I've been validated, I don't know what I can do to get out, or the pathway that's been offered to me puts me in danger, puts my fellow prisoners in danger, puts my community in danger. And then here I am sitting for year after year, or in some cases, like you noted, decade after decade. So one of the things is that, you know, along with this, is that these prisoners, especially the kind of core of the strikers coming out of Pelican Bay, understand the CDCR's policies, and they've studied them, and they understand the law, and they've read their regulations, and they've read their so-called reforms, and their point that they keep making is, everything leads to this debriefing, and nothing necessarily leads away from indefinite security housing unit sentences. So they said, you know, at the end of the day, and they've been articulate, you know, especially in the past few days, that these cul-de-sacs are still there. This institution is still firmly in place. We feel trapped. And I think that just like the gentleman that you quoted, that goes along with the feeling of torture, that, wait, I don't know how I can ever get out of here. And then, you know, obviously then there's other analysis of why and how certain people would be targeted, and what's the investment of the prison system in keeping them in there for so long.
That is Isaac Ontiveros, Communications Director for Critical Resistance. He's on the media team for the Prison Hunger Strike Solidarity Coalition. Nancy Mullane is a freelance reporter who covers prisons. She has gained unprecedented access to San Quentin, including the solitary unit called the Adjustment Center, one of the only reporters who has reached level 4 at that prison. She's also author of Life After Murder, 5 Men in Search of Redemption. Today we're talking about the prison strike. It's said to be the largest prison strike ever in the state of California. On Monday, 30,000 inmates at 22 of the state's 33 prisons and 4 out-of-state prisons where California inmates are sent refused to eat. They're now on day 4. What questions do you have about conditions inside California's prisons, and how do you think the state should respond? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And now I would like to welcome Terry Thornton to the show. Terry is spokeswoman for the CDCR. Hi, Terry. Welcome to the show. Hello, Terry. Do we have Terry?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
So, Terry, can you give us an update? How many inmates at this point are refusing to eat?
Well, we're tallying those numbers now. It's significantly lower. Keep in mind that the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation does not consider an inmate to be on a hunger strike until he has missed 9 consecutive meals. So those numbers are being tallied as we speak, and we'll be providing an update later this afternoon.
And what is your response to the demands of the prisoners who are asking for a 5-year limit specifically on solitary confinement?
Well, I think some of those issues they're raising in litigation, and I can't comment on the ongoing litigation. I can tell you, however, that the California Department of Corrections has totally overhauled the way it manages SHU, Security Housing Unit Confinement, and the way it manages security threat groups, which includes prison gangs and disruptive groups. As part of these reforms, we have conducted case-by-case reviews. At the end of June, we had completed 382 of those. 208 inmates housed in security housing units have already been released and transferred to general population prisons, or are getting ready to be transferred to general population prisons. And another 115 inmates were placed in various phases of the step-down program. Everything the CDCR committed to doing in 2011, we have done, and we feel that the reforms have addressed all the inmates' concerns that they raised in 2011.
Can I ask you something, Terry? Nancy. This is Nancy Mullane. I've been reporting on prisons, as you know. And do you feel that the hunger strike in 2011 actually was effective?
I can't speak to that because CDCR does not condone inmate disturbances. Mass hunger strikes, work stoppages, these other disruptions can impact the safety and security of inmates who are not participating in this action. It can affect the safety of staff. It can impact inmate programming. And we feel that it's really not an effective way for inmates to bring their concerns to prison administrators.
How does it affect the safety if they're simply refusing to eat in their cells?
Because we've already getting reports of inmates who are feeling pressured, being pressured by other inmates to participate in this action. The vast majority of inmates are not participating in this, and they don't want to be pressured by these types of actions, which are being directed by people who belong to prison gangs.
Do you have evidence of that? I mean, how do you know?
We've had inmates telling us we're being pressured, we're being threatened to participate in this. This can be a very serious security concern for us.
Terry, do you think that all prisoners are being pressured, or do you think that some of them are making? This is Isaac Ontiveros.
Yeah, and is this going to be moderated by the host, or is this just a free for all conversation? I wasn't aware of the.
I'm sorry, I just had a question because you're the spokesperson for the CDCR.
Yeah, Terry, we didn't have much time to talk to you because someone else canceled 5 minutes before the show. But do you mind taking questions from the other panelists?
No, I don't mind. I just wasn't aware that that was the format of the show. So I apologize.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, go ahead, Isaac. That's Isaac Ontiveros with Critical Resistance.
Terry, I'm just curious. So it seems like what you're saying is any participation in the hunger strike is directed by a vast criminal conspiracy led by prison gangs. I'm curious if the CDCR is interested in thinking about any participant in the hunger strike having legitimate concerns and grievances about the conditions that they live through.
CDCR is concerned about that, and CDCR has addressed that.
And so I guess my question, I have one follow-up question, is why do you think they'd be going on strike now? If the reforms are in place, if the reforms are effective, why is it prisoners understanding that indefinite SHU terms are still in place, that and all of these other conditions, and you know, prisoners in at least 7 other prisons have made demands around their particular conditions, not just in SHU, but out on the mainline. I'm just curious if there's any way to engage with them without reducing their complaints to being a criminal conspiracy led by gangs.
And before you answer that, Terry, we're going to take a quick break. That is Isaac Ontiveros, Communications Director with Critical Resistance. Terry Thornton is spokeswoman with the Department of Corrections in California. Nancy Mullane is a freelance reporter who covers the prison system. What questions do you have about conditions, and how do you think the state should respond? It's your call. We'll be back after this.
Please join today's conversation. Your call is a program that depends on engaged listeners. The number to call is 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255, or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll have a conversation about media coverage of the ongoing hunger strikes at Guantanamo Bay. We'll also discuss the Center for Investigative Reporting's piece, which revealed that California prisons sterilized female inmates without state approvals. We'll talk about the challenges involved in covering prisons. And then on Monday, we'll talk about foreclosures. Could Richmond, California have a model for solving the ongoing foreclosure crisis? And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're talking about what is reported to be the largest prison hunger strike ever in the state of California. On Monday, 30,000 inmates refused to eat to protest long-term confinement and solitary isolation units. And it's day four. Advocates say this could last for weeks. And if you have any questions about the conditions inside California's prisons, if you've worked in a prison, if you've been in a prison, we'd love to hear from you. And how should the state respond? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Nancy Mullane. She's gained unprecedented access to San Quentin, including the solitary unit called the Adjustment Center. She's author of Life After Murder, Five Men in Search of Redemption. And you can hear her reports at KALW News. Isaac Ontiveros is communications director with Critical Resistance. He's also on the media team for the Prisoner Hunger Strike Solidarity Coalition. And Terry Thornton is spokeswoman with the California Department of Corrections. And Terry, what is the engagement process like with the prisoners who are refusing to eat?
Well, CDCR has already had meetings with inmates. We will continue to keep the dialogue open with inmates and their representatives. We'll keep the lines of communication open with anyone who needs to communicate with this department.
And I wanted to ask you, solitarywatch.com has a number of photos of men who are in solitary along with some quotes. And they quoted Marcus Harrison. He's 41. He's at Pelican Bay. Following validation as a Black guerrilla family member, he's been in solitary confinement since 1994. And he says, quote, "The revisions have only strengthened CDCR officials' power and ability to label and validate every prisoner in CDCR as belonging to a security threat group, a prison gang. At the crux of the revisions is a lack of a definitive and behavioral-based criteria as to what actually constitutes as being gang activity, meaning any and everything can and will still be considered gang activity in spite of how innocuous the activity may be." How would you respond to his concern?
The revisions are on our website. Anyone can read those and read the criteria for which we are now validating inmates as associates of a security threat group. We've been very transparent with this process, but I need to make a point here. There is no solitary confinement in California prisons. The CDCR does not consider the security housing unit solitary confinement.
Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Well, let me ask you, how do you even define solitary confinement?
Well, according to the reports I've read, prisoners in solitary confinement, or the SHU, are isolated for 22.5 hours a day in a windowless cell. They're denied telephone calls, contact visits, any kind of programming, adequate food and medical care. So I guess that's how I would define it.
Well, that's an inaccurate description of inmates who are housed in the security housing unit.
Okay, so tell us, the inmates in these security units, tell us about the conditions, how long are they in there, what else do we need to know about it?
Well, inmates in the security housing unit are in a certain privileged group, which means that they get a minimum of 10 hours of yard time a week. In fact, that's the minimum of yard time that any inmate in the system is supposed to at least have. They do get out to the yard and out of their cells typically every day. In fact, I've heard inmates who've been released and transferred out of the SHU as a result of our case-by-case reviews, and they're now living on general population yards, complaining that they're not getting out to the yard every day. They're complaining that they're, you know, having to live with other general population inmates, younger ones. They don't like all the yard politics that they're having to deal with. But I'm digressing just a little bit here. But many inmates in the security housing unit do have cellmates. They do have access to educational programs, reading materials, a law library. They have cable television. They have radio. They can correspond with people. This description of, you know, somehow that they're just isolated with no human contact is really an exaggeration.
You know, Terry, as you know, I spent, I had requested as a reporter to have access to a number of the most restricted areas in California's prisons, one of them being Pelican Bay Security Housing Unit. And one of the conditions for taking the eight-hour drive north to the Oregon border, which Pelican Bay is just south of the Oregon border, was to be able to go inside a cell. I really wanted to be inside a cell with an inmate in the security housing unit. And the CDCR accepted my request. I traveled. I went up there. I spent the entire day in the security housing unit. And I was able to go inside a cell, to be inside the cell with a number of, actually one inmate, but I was interviewing a number of inmates. And, you know, when you see the images on websites and photographs, when you get there and you actually go through the facility, it is not what I expected. I have to say, it was not what I would see as a solitary confinement unit. The inmates are in pods of eight cells. So there's cells on the bottom, cells on the top. It's a fairly large open room. The cells are porous doors, so there's air. As I mentioned before, there's this huge skylight, so there's a lot of natural light. The inmates have cells that are larger, almost by half, of the cells that are in San Quentin, where 5,000 inmates are living in in cells that of a level 2 environment. The cells are much larger. The beds are much larger. They had televisions, they had radio, they had reading materials that I could see easily in all of the cells. So I think that one of the things that is really important as part of this whole hunger strike is, what exactly are the inmates asking for, and what is the and if we can look at that, you know, and kind of get away from the rhetoric of whether it's solitary confinement or it's a security housing unit, but get to the exactly what these inmates are asking for, and then look at what does that mean. Because one of the things that you discover when you go to Pelican Bay or you go to any of these institutions is, you know, there are security and safety concerns. And so what do we want the CDCR and our prison system to do with inmates that are validated as gang members? If they're active gang members and they're what's called shot callers, gang leaders who are actively leading gang activity from the inside the prison, what conditions do we want as a society these inmates to be in, so that they can be, there is a security issue, we can deal with that. If there is a safety issue, we can deal with that. And that's kind of where my reporting has taken me, is that I'm now going inside these facilities and seeing these inmates who are human beings, inmates, people that are living in these environments. And I think having access, you know, the press having access to these environments, so we can really get in and talk to these inmates and see these inmates and see their conditions, and then accurately, you know, tell the public what those conditions are, so that the public can take that information and really decide, what do we want to do with this? How much security do we need?
Well, what Yeah, and that's refreshing to hear you say that, Nancy, and I couldn't agree with you more. In the 15 years I've worked here, I've always advocated for reporters to visit our prisons and to visit them routinely. Don't wait until there's some sort of a crisis. But, you know, call us up. You can interview inmates randomly if you want to. You can go through these different types of units that we have within the CDCR. And I really appreciate you advocating getting away from all of this inflammatory rhetoric and all of these allegations. You know, we need to demystify the security housing units, particularly at Pelican Bay State Prison, and have a real informed conversation about conditions of confinement. CDCR takes these issues very seriously. That's why we work very hard to reform not only, you know, how we manage gangs, how we manage confinement in the security housing unit, but how we improve mental health care for all inmates, how we improve medical care for inmates, how we comply with all of this, the court oversight. And I need to point out, too, that the CDCR is under a great deal of scrutiny. There are court monitors in and out of our prisons all the time, including the security housing units, not only at Pelican Bay, but all of the other three institutions that have them. There is independent oversight by the Office of the Inspector General, Bureau of State Audits. There have been legislative hearings. There have been media visits. We have court special masters. We have a receiver. And with all of this oversight, you know, it just boggles the imagination to suggest that anything abusive, even remotely abusive, would be occurring at any of our prisons without somebody knowing about it by now.
Terry, don't you think that people do know about it, and that's why they're going on hunger strike, or that's why the federal courts are so involved in the California prison system?
These court cases have been going on for decades. The Coleman lawsuit was filed more than 20 years ago.
Sure. I guess my question is, if everything is so rosy, why so much pressure and so much scandal?
I can't answer the question and delve into the minds of why our people are motivated to do what they did. All I can talk about is what this department is doing in response to that, what we have committed to doing, what we will continue to do. There have been many opportunities presented to this department in the last few years, especially with the massive reduction in overcrowding. It has given us a chance to not have a smaller prison system, but to have a better prison system.
So I guess one of the things that we were just talking about was sitting down and demystifying things. You know, one of the things I was asked was, what do these prisoners who are on hunger strike currently really want? I feel like they lay out their demands fairly clearly, and then they've elaborated over the course of the past couple of years. I'm curious, if it's all just one big misunderstanding, then why not? One of the things that they've put out since January is their willingness to sit down, to talk, to enter into good faith negotiations. If you don't want to use the word negotiations, then discussions. I mean, I think they're clear around, let's outline, let's have deliverables, let's put stuff in writing, let's have agreement, let's talk about this step down program, let's talk about the debriefing process, let's talk about putting an end to indeterminate SHU sentences. I'm just curious, why not avoid crisis, right? So you're just talking about today would be a mass disturbance in the prison system. Why not sit down with the strikers, their representatives on the inside, on the outside, and enter into good faith and honest conversations? Why not do that?
We have been doing that for the last 2 years.
You're doing that this week?
We have been doing that. We will continue to keep the lines of communication open.
So then if, for example, I write to one of the representatives and I can tell them that, and then you'll contact with them and they can sit down with you and you can negotiate a way out of this strike?
Prisoners can always contact the administrators at each institution. Every prison has an inmate advisory council. There's an appeals process. Any inmate can write an elected official. They can write to and contact the oversight agencies. There are many constructive ways, including litigation, for them to address their concerns.
So just to be clear, you said the CDCR is willing to negotiate with the strikers.
Engaging in behavior that violates state law and endangers other inmates is not an acceptable way to bring forth their concerns.
So in order for the end to so they will put an end to the strike if you enter into good faith negotiations.
We have already
will you do
been
that with
discussing
them
that with them. We have had discussions with them. We will continue to do that.
So you will negotiate with the strikers?
We don't negotiate with anyone. We don't negotiate with people who are trying to hold the prison system hostage. We don't condone these types of disturbances. We will keep the lines of communication open, and we will manage the prisons as safely as possible with as little interruption to normal programming as possible.
Terry, we've got a couple of listeners who are calling in with some questions. Can you stick around for a few more minutes?
Yes.
Okay. Terry Thornton is spokeswoman with the California Department of Corrections. Thank you for that. Isaac Ontiveros is communications director with Critical Resistance. And Nancy Mullane is author of Life After Murder, Five Men in Search of Redemption. She's been covering the prison system for the past 7 years. And we're talking today about the California prison hunger strike. You can join us at 866-798-8255. Email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Larry in Berkeley. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Larry Everest. One dimension that I think is missing here is the humanity and transformation of the prisoners. They're being vilified, including by one of the guests here, and I know by the CDCR, as gangbangers, shot callers, worst of the worst. But the fact of the matter is, and this is something we've emphasized in our coverage at Revolution, who I write for, is that the prisoners have issued a call in August 2012 for an end to hostilities between racial groups, which they argue the CDCR fosters. And just this week, right after the hunger strike started, the prisoner hunger strikers said they were taking this action on behalf of all prisoners and the oppressed of the whole world. So this indicates that rather than the worst of the worst, these prisoners are risking their lives to improve conditions for people across this country where 80,000 people are in some form of solitary confinement. And this is the reason somebody like Bob Avakian has said the people that the system has cast off can not only fight for their own oppression, but be the backbone of a fight to end all oppression and emancipate humanity. And I think that has to really be part of this discussion and the humanity and the motives. And Isaac was referencing this with the demands need to be not. We can't allow the prisoners to be vilified as they have been so relentlessly.
All right, Larry, thank you for calling. We're going to take a few more calls and then we'll get responses. Let's go next to Andre in San Francisco. Hi, Andre. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Rose. Thank you so much. I certainly understand some people do need to be locked up, but I have a couple of questions, and one is for the lady from the CDC. I'd like to know what kind of statistics are kept and who validates those statistics from a psychological point of view about the mental illness that people have who are forced into the SHU. Not that they get it from being in the SHU, but that they are all already mentally ill going into the SHU. And the second question that I have is for the other interviewers, and that is, I'd like to know their reports of the incidents of rape by guards of those people who are in the SHU.
All right. Thank you for that question. We'll go to one more caller, and then we'll get a response. Let's hear from Todd in Carmel. Hi, Todd.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, let me turn my radio down. The real situation here is rehabilitation. I taught at Soledad for years, and I did teach a pre-release program for years. And the problem is you have two hostile camps that don't speak to one another. And the motives of the inmates are various, but the motives of CDC are the same. And you here where you have two groups. One's all about money, the CDC, and the other one's all about power, the inmates. And the inmates have no real power except what they exert on one another. So the system is broken because the system is designed to punish and to get snitches. It's not designed to rehabilitate people. It's a horrible system that anybody who walks through it realizes.
All right. Well, thank you for that. So we have a lot of questions. Terry, we're getting a lot of also some emails just about that sort of repeats what our last caller just said, what Todd just said. And according to the California's cost to incarcerate, it's about $47,000 per year to incarcerate an inmate in prison.
Actually, as of fiscal year 2013-2014, it's $60,032.
Ah, so our stat is incredibly low. All right, $60,000.
Well, it changes every fiscal year.
Mm-hmm. But I have a question for that. Terry, doesn't it also mean that that's kind of an average? And if someone's in a security housing...
That's the average annual cost to house an inmate in the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The cost has gone up because our population has gone down. We're left with a inmates who are serving long and life sentences with the after the implementation of realignment, public safety realignment. We don't have very many minimum security inmates anymore. The ones we do have are primarily living in our camps, conservation camps, out there on the fire lines, protecting our neighborhoods and people's property from these wildfires.
And I also want to go back again to the treatment. You talked earlier about what actually, how you define the SHU, or how you define solitary confinement. And according to a UN petition filed by the Center for Human Rights and Constitutional Law, they looked at a man, Todd Ashker, who's 50. He's at Pelican Bay, incarcerated since 84, in the SHU since 86, after prison officials deemed him a member of the Aryan Brotherhood. He denies the charge. He says his yard time is canceled due to staff training. From the years 89 to 2011, he received zero time outside other than when he was allowed to go into a small enclosed concrete yard. He spent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in a small concrete cell for 22 years. And then he also talked about meals being watered down, undercooked food, salad is rotten, trays are always dirty, covered with dirty dishwasher water. What are your thoughts on that?
So, where do you want me to start?
Well, I mean, you said earlier that I'm just trying to figure out.
I happen to know that Todd
who's
Ashker
in solitary.
Also, Todd Ashker, when he was first put in the security housing unit, it was because he killed his cellmate. He stabbed his cellmate while his cellmate was watching television.
So, but Terry, what about the conditions piece? So, I think people are asking though. Okay. They're asking about the conditions. What about the conditions? What about the changes? I just want to, in order to have this conversation, are you arguing that everything is okay
no,
in every
I'm
part of the prison
system?
I'm
not arguing that everything is okay. I just don't even have time to just speak to every single thing. Let's just talk about food for a moment then. We'll start with food. The department's food menus are all based on nutritional guidelines. These guidelines are established by the Food and Nutrition Board of the Academy of Science. Inmates eat a heart-healthy diet. CDCR standardized menu review team. We have this team. It's made up of food managers, health care managers. They meet regularly. They address inmates' concerns. The Office of the Inspector General also looked at the food operation, specifically at Pelican Bay. They found everything to be compliant with all policies and laws and dietary guidelines as well. And recently, the American Correctional Association, which is it's a national organization, it's the oldest, actually international correctional association, the oldest and largest in the world, recently audited Pelican Bay State Prison. And Pelican Bay met every mandatory requirement as part of that on-site audits, their compliance with all the mandatory standards, and that prison is going to be presented for official accreditation later this year.
We have a few questions, Terry, about how the money is actually spent—the $64,000 a year.
$60,000.
How is that spent?
$32 for fiscal year 2013-2014. That includes everything that an inmate requires, which includes security, medical care, mental health care, and that's another reason for the increase in that average annual cost to house an inmate, because of the increased spending on mental health care and medical care. But it includes dental care as well. It includes clothing, rehabilitative programs, education, vocational education. It includes everything.
And, Terry, a lot of advocates say this hunger strike might last weeks. How is the CDCR planning to respond?
We're going to be putting out a statement later this afternoon that will detail that.
Okay, well, we'll watch for that. Nancy, final thoughts from you, briefly?
You know, I appreciate the opportunity to come on. And I think, you know, one of the comments that one of the callers made that, you know, I participate in a vilification of inmates. I think, you know, I've been there. I've been to these prisons. I've spent the time over the last 6.5 years, you know, going into these environments, talking to the inmates, doing the research, doing the reporting. And all I can say is I'm bringing back to the public what I have seen and what I have heard. And I've been through a number of different institutions. And I must say that I think if the CDCR, you know, had, if we actually had more press access, I think, you know, that would be very helpful. I know that the CDCR does try to bring, you know, does try to make it accessible for reporters to have access, but it's very hard to go to some of these prisons. They're hours away. It takes days to get there. It takes a rigorous reporting to do this kind of reporting. But I do think that, you know, making, you know, looking at the issues that are at stake right now, looking at indeterminate shoe terms, looking at the issues that the inmates are bringing up, that's really, we want to stay away. I think it's best to stay away from some of the rhetoric.
And I just want to end. We just got a call from Brian Nelson, who used to be in solitary confinement in Chicago. He now works at Uptown People's Law Center in Chicago. Hi, Brian. Thanks for calling in. I understand you spent 23 years in solitary confinement.
Yes, and I did 12 years straight at Pam Supermax. And the sad part with shoes, the day before I was placed in Pam Supermax, I was housed in a minimum security prison, and I didn't catch no tickets. I was just taken and put in the Supermax prison, and then I was released from Pam's, basically through society, after 12 years straight in solitary confinement.
And unfortunately, we're almost out of time, Brian, but what are your thoughts in about a minute of the prison strike happening here in California?
We had to do a similar one at TAMS, and if it wasn't for Belinda Belcher and Alan Mills at Uptown People's Law Center supporting us, we wouldn't have been able to get the changes that made TAMS possible to become more in letter with the law, and they recently closed TAMS because it's just wrong.
Hmm. And so you actually saw changes because of the hunger strike, because of the strike.
We made substantial changes, and I had went 48 days on hunger strikes before, and what people don't understand is when you're willing to sacrifice your life for something that's meaningful, I mean, nobody could tell you what it's like to be in solitary confinement unless you've been there.
Yeah.
And
well, you
what
know,
happens to you in that cell?
We're going to have you on another show. Thank you so much for calling in. Brian Nelson was in solitary 23 years in Chicago. I want to thank Terry Thornton, spokeswoman with the CDCR, Nancy Mullane, author of Life After Murder, reporter covering this issue. Isaac Ontiveros is with Critical Resistance. Thank you all for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar at Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll have a conversation about media coverage of the ongoing hunger strikes at Guantanamo Bay. We'll also discuss the Center for Investigative Reporting story, which revealed that California prisons sterilized female inmates without approvals. What are the challenges involved in covering prisons? We'll be joined by the Center's Corey Johnson, McClatchy's Carol Rosenberg, and Solitary Watch's James Ridgway. What did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you.